Friends, as you know, nowadays we're having a series of 5 talks on the subject of Zen Buddhism. And we are approaching, I'm afraid, the end of the series, this being the 4th talk in that series. Those of you who have been attending since the beginning will remember that the first talk was more or less introductory to the series rather than part of the series proper. We began by seeing that Zen represented the meditation school of Buddhism, that within the total Buddhist tradition, Zen is, as it were, that school or that special tradition which took for its special subject matter meditation, which, as it were, specialized in the practice of meditation. We saw also at the same time that even though Zen can be quite legitimately described as the meditation school of Buddhism, as specializing in meditation, is also much more than that. We saw that it has certain distinctive features. And we went on to see further that in trying to understand, in trying to comprehend those distinctive features, there are certain misunderstandings which have to be avoided, and which we are trying to avoid in the course of these talks. The first misunderstanding is brought about by having to Zen a purely intellectual approach, by trying to understand it simply with the mind, in the sense of the intellect, the rational mind. Then we saw also that misunderstanding, even confusion, could be created by trying to understand Zen apart from Buddhism. That is, trying to understand the branch, as it were, apart from the trunk to which the branch belongs. And finally, we saw that another very productive source of confusion was mistaking the finger for the moon, concentrating on the finger and ignoring the moon, even forgetting the existence of the moon to which the finger was pointing. I don't want to elaborate on these matters because I dealt with them fully in this first talk, and I recapitulated also last week and the week before that. Now, in the course of this series of talks, we're trying to understand Zen, especially its distinctive features, over and above the fact that it is the meditation school of Buddhism, with the help of a certain traditional verse, a verse which has come down from ancient times and which embodies the most important principles or teachings of the Zen school. It's a very short verse, it's a very simple one apparently, but full of meaning. And it goes like this. Describing Zen, it says, a special transmission outside the scriptures. No dependence upon words and letters. Direct pointing to the heart or mind of man. Seeing into one's own nature and attaining Buddhahood. So each week we're studying one line of this verse. Each week we're devoting ourselves to the study of one line, trying to extract as much as we can of its meaning, if not actually its full meaning. Now, 2 lines have already been dealt with. The week before last we dealt with the line, a special transmission outside the scriptures. First of all, we surveyed the scriptures of Buddhism. We tried to understand what they were. We saw how vast they were, how many different works they included, how many different versions there were in so many different languages, and so on. And we tried at the same time to understand what was meant by a transmission outside the scriptures, or a special transmission outside the scriptures. And in this way, we came to understand that Zen, or the Zen school, was not concerned just with meditation in the technical sense. So it is concerned with them also as an instrument, but with the transmission of what we may call the living spirit of Buddhism. In other words, the transmission of the experience of enlightenment itself. The transmission directly, the transmission from heart to heart and from mind to mind. From the heart of the master to the heart of the disciple, or from the mind of the master to the mind of the disciple, directly, immediately. Now, last week we dealt with the second line, which runs, no dependence upon words and letters. And in the first place, we try to understand, we try to actually to see how dependent we are upon words and letters, upon books and other things of that sort. And we saw, or at least we began to see, how almost the whole of our knowledge is really second hand. Not direct, not immediate, but mediate. We saw that even with regard to our knowledge of spiritual things, and perhaps we may say especially with regard to our knowledge of spiritual things, our knowledge of reality, our so-called knowledge is all the time second hand, derived, dependent, not original to ourselves, not real knowledge. And we saw too that most of the time we are quite unaware of this. We think that we know something when we've only read about it or heard about it and thought about what we've read and about what we've heard. Most of the time we don't know that really we don't know deeply or truly. In other words, all the time we're confusing our second-hand knowledge with real knowledge. And we think that we know, when in reality, we don't know. So because of this confusion, there is no progress. We can progress only when we realize what we know and what we don't know. Then we can go from what we don't know to what we know. But if we think that we know when we don't, then no spiritual progress is possible at all. So Zen sees the great danger of this. Zen sees the danger of depending upon this second-hand knowledge and mistaking it for real knowledge, for true knowledge. And so therefore it says, no dependence upon words and letters. In other words, no dependence on second-hand knowledge of things, especially spiritual things, mistaking that second-hand knowledge for real knowledge. Now, that's the point which we reached at the conclusion of last week's talk. Now, this leaves us, as you'll see, rather in the air, suspended, as it were, in the midst of a sort of void. We're not allowed to depend, according to Zen, on second-hand knowledge. Second-hand knowledge about nirvana, or second-hand knowledge about karma, or second-hand knowledge about enlightenment. We're not allowed to depend on that second-hand knowledge. We have to put it all aside. On the other hand, we don't have any real knowledge. We've no real knowledge because we've no experience. So we're caught, as it were. We're suspended, as it were, between these two alternatives. Suspended, as I've said, in the void, with nothing to support us, with nothing on which we can really depend. So the question arises, if we're not to depend on the second-hand knowledge, if we can't depend on the real knowledge because we haven't got it yet, then on what are we to depend? So this, as I've just said, is where we found ourselves at the end of last week's talk.